jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the preseason one episode of the Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2021. We are recording this on video for the first time. And so if there's any oddities, we normally record. That may be the reason why. This was on the whim. The recording may not go up, especially if Mark starts taking his top off. But welcome back to the show.
Yeah, good to be chatting with you too, mate. I can't believe, what is this, year 14 or something crazy? And I guess now you'll just be able to see me rolling my eyes 13. When you say something stupid.
I think I was 17 when I started this, so it's almost half my life.
Wow.
Anyway, that's enough reminiscing probably for now. We are back for the first show. We're not going to go through the positional stuff yet, as we normally start with. Instead, we're going to have a look at the top pick players. I think that's actually a pretty good starting point to understand where the temperature of the community is at. And we actually started using that as the starting point for our positional shows last year. I thought that worked quite well. We can touch on the hot button players, and that may delve into a little bit more consideration around how much you spend on the big name players versus where do you go for value, et cetera. And then we'll have a think about how we execute the rest of the shows, whether we go back to a condensed positional show or something else. So I don't know about yourself, Mark, but I'm finding the football media landscape very different in 2021. We're 30 days or something out from the start of the season, and the momentum just isn't the same, I think, as it used to be. There's definitely less journos than there used to be, right? There's like
Didn't they sack all the journos last year?
Yes, so it's something for us to be wary of as we head into this preseason. Also, there's only going to be one game of preseason to head into 2021. If we thought that 2020 was the end of COVID, especially as it relates to Supercoach planning, I think that's not going to quite be the case. Certainly, even in picking our teams, I don't think we'll ever have flown this blind. Even last year, we had a few more games to go off, but the preseason was actually relatively smooth last year.
Yeah, and half the stuff is behind a paywall as well, which I refuse to pay for. I'm going to be relying on social media, Twitter, the community, and decentralized information. Like, potentially, this is an advantage.
We started to see that shift happen a little bit, even with apps like Discord. Discord community is relatively lively for the Supercoach community. So if you're feeling like jumping on board, links will be in this cast details. It's just great to be able to have that instant feedback, to be able to post some memes when your players are doing well, especially during injuries and laid outs. Like, I really love that the few people on the community were just pretty active in letting people know when they saw things. Previously, we were having to think about getting an app to be able to do this stuff. Yeah, no, technology has certainly changed. So before we get into top pick players, Mark, did you want to just share any initial thoughts on 2021? Have you had a bit of a pick through your own team, or are you just mostly looking at players still? Was your team mostly Bombers to start off with? I start with a lot of Geelong players. They get cold.
Well, Geelong do have a lot of stars in their team, mate, so I could understand that. No, not a lot of Bombers players. I don't actually think I have any. I had Nick Cox in there just because he's one rookie that I know probably a bit more about. Andy McGrath is potentially in consideration. Zach Merritt. But realistically, my thoughts are it all comes down to the rucks. Like, everything that you do comes down to how you feel that R1 and R2. And that is pretty much a repeat of most years on this show. Getting those ruck decisions has been the thing we've spent most time on pretty much every year, even though it's only two spots. And there's a lot of overpriced players.
That's going to be a big one. The impact of season 2020 and the scaling of points due to the reduced time, leading to a lot of overpriced players potentially just heading into 2021, reverting to a normal game time. That's going to be interesting. I've heard people discuss that and the impact of scaling being more or less on different types of players, like Bontempelli. It's obviously one that attracts a bit of scaling, so the scaling gets amped up even further. But how much can you really pick that to try and make better strategic decisions? That's reasonably questionable as well. But something to keep in mind as you're looking through more from an overall team structure point of view is that there may be an opportunity to forego potentially some of those overpriced players and hope for a bit of a drop. But then you've always got the challenge of being able to bring them back in later on. So I'm sure when we get through some of these top picked players, that's going to be some of the initial sort of talking points. All right, I do have to put a bit of a disclaimer out there. I am currently seated at my sister's, which is in sunny New South Wales, which means I've escaped the lockdown that, Mark, you're in at the moment. Fortunately, after last year's training, we all seem to be pretty good with it. But what that means, recording point of view, I guess what I'm telling this otherwise redundant story, is that my sound quality might be a bit poorer. Maybe one other thing to mention is that Mark is going traveling this year, which is super exciting, and next year as well. So if we keep doing these videos, it may be from pretty cool remote locations, although we'll have to see how the Wi-Fi is. And so we may get more of Mark, or we may get less of Mark, depending on how the internet situation works out. But very excited for you, mate. You've been talking about this for a little while, so and take the family and travel about. What do you think does that mean for your Supercoach team?
I did talk to my wife about it, and she thought it might mean more time on Supercoach for her and for me. Yeah. Leaving my job to go traveling, you could say I'm going full-time Supercoach, pro Supercoach player, I'm not sure. That is the plan. I think it will depend on internet. So I think that I'll have more time for Supercoach in some senses, but being we only get 24 hours team notice, I'm not going to be deciding where I go based on having internet access on the weekend like I would in Melbourne. We'll see what happens. Be an adventure.
Mm. We look forward to the updates on the road. We may have to have a segment for that. Mark in front of large animals and fruits across Australia. That's a thing, right? All right. Yeah. Enough side chat. I guess people are here for some Supercoach content, so we'll get into it. And we'll start maybe in the back line. We'll still try and tackle this positionally rather than just going through the whole varied list. We'll start off with the most picked player in the back line, who is unsurprisingly, maybe surprisingly, Jake Lloyd, 48.6% of teams. At time of recording, I guess we should mention, this is Tuesday the 16th of February. Now, price point, absolutely massive, 656 averaged 120 plus last year, and was an absolute crusher if you did not have him, and I was one of those. Makes me think that I should bite the bullet and start him. Sometimes when you see such a huge differential in scoring, it tends to be a pretty good reason to pick him up, and with his level of consistency, it's another boon in terms of defenders normally ebbing and flowing a bit more. Luke Ryan's maybe a guy you can rely on dropping a poor game once in a while as a more tall defender, versus Jake Lloyd, who's doing kickouts, and there's rule changes now so that the kickout distance is even further, so he's got even more license to run and gun from the back line. What do you reckon about Lloyd, mate? Is he locked in your team?
Definitely not locked. I think you made a pretty good case for him right then, though. It was literally went and put him into my team. You'd expect Lloyd to be 600. He's 650. That's not a crazy differential. It's 10%, maybe a little bit less than 10% for a guy that looks like he should easily be top player or top two on the line. I have a long history of not rating Jake Lloyd at all as a player, but loved having him in my team last year, and he had a huge impact on a successful season. It really depends on how you rate the players around him. At this stage, he's probably 50-50 for my team.
I think the only reason you might leave him off is the temptation to really lean into that overpriced situation. Does Jake Lloyd really look more like a 115 player rather than a 120 player in the non-2020 time-affected year? And therefore, if you can get him averaging 110 for a little bit, that's already, you know, 12-point difference. Then to your previous point, Mark, do you risk that potential discount later in the season versus just starting him? So I'm sure lots of people will go through that consideration, and 50-50 reflects his ownership stats at the moment, and certainly higher than most other players that you'd consider. All right, next guy, Zachy Williams, 42.5%, crossover to Carlton now. Injuries is certainly a concern, something that we try to factor in when we're making a selection. But he's moving up into the midfield for Carlton, which is particularly exciting. What do you reckon, Mark?
absolute lock. I just think he's shown when he's played midfield at the Giants before that he can score very big. So huge upside. New club. We've seen a lot of players go to a new club and be really good in their first year. He's a player that I've liked for a long time. You get a price discount on that injury factor. What percent of teams is he in? 42%? That's too low.
Yeah, he's my first pick defender in the primo spot. So easy choice there for me as well. Next player, Rory Laird. A tale of two halves was season 2020 for Rory. He's currently in 40.8% of teams. So most people are looking toward his second half of the season when he was unleashed in the midfield. Now, with the sea change that's happening in Adelaide, you would think that may continue into 2021. And I have a feeling that's why a lot of people have piled him in. Some of the scores in the back end of that season were huge. He'd already spent a bit of midfield time angling toward that even in seasons prior. And depth mid flexibility is pretty nice. 564,000 does carry some risk though, but he is pretty damn consistent. Has been a top 3-4 defender for years now. What do you reckon about Laird, Mark?
Big Rory Laird fan. I had him in his rookie year and he was good to me back then. And most of the time he's been good to me since. He averaged 108 in 2018 as a halfback flanker, so it wasn't just a once-off average of 105 last year. Definitely started the year slowly in a pretty crappy team. Reports are at the moment that he'll continue in the midfield role. He's so good at it that you would understand that. Brad Crouch has left the club, so I very much expect him to continue in that role, and you're basically getting someone that is a top two midfielder at their club in defence, with a proven scoring history and with a discount because he had a different role for the first half of last year. That's just way too many reasons to pick him. Yeah, him and Williams, 100% locked in at the moment unless there's injury news.
I'm still a little bit worried about his role consistency across the whole season. I'm not quite at the lock status, but he's certainly picked ahead of Lloyd at the moment for me. We've talked about three great options, three standout options in the back line, and that's already quite a lot of spots filled. And looking at the ownership stats, you actually see a fairly significant drop-off in percentage ownership after that. The next highest is Lockie Whitfield, 22.3. Then you're looking at Wayne Malera at 16.9, then Tom Stewart at 12% of teams at the moment. So these three are the standout options. Lockie Whitfield, should note, had a problem with his liver, so we wish him all the best in getting better, but there's no defined return and internal organs are pretty serious. Who knows what his status is for now? Probably will start dropping in the ownership stakes a little bit, but if he does come good in the preseason, he would be pretty tempting as well. There's a bit of discount attached to his head compared to his max potential as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's move into the midfield where the big guns are. Now, a bit more of a spread here, not the same standout options. Oh, actually, when you remove the mid forwards and the mid backs, maybe there's a couple of guys that really do stand out. Matt Rowell and Lockie Neal, both are in above 50% of teams at the moment. Lockie Neal, second most expensive player after Maxi Gawn last year. If you didn't start with him, really hurt, and the same was true in the previous year. So Lockie Neal starts like absolute house on fire. If you're going to pick Lockie Neal, starting him has tended to be a good bet. We've talked about Jake Lloyd. I'm sure we're going to be pretty tempted by the ruck options forward. And we've got Dangerfield and Martin and Dunkley in the forward line this year. That really starts to make you think whether or not you should be paying that same price premium for a midfield ultra gun when there are potentially more replaceable options with a little bit of value left in them. But Neil, I'm sure, will tempt and make most sides as he's currently more popular than Lloyd at the moment.
I still haven't totally landed on a position. I think that one thing you've got to consider with your side is you need two or three really reliable captain options. So probably at least two that you'd be happy to go in with a VC, already played, done crap, and you're just going in with a captain. You'd want two players that you'd be happy to do that with. And so paying up for one super premium midfielder seems it could make sense just purely from that perspective. Whether that's exactly Lockie Neal or not, I'm not totally sure. I mean, there's not exactly huge competition for him. So from that perspective, there's a really good chance that Neal makes my team. Is he the new super premium scoring midfielder, or was last year a bit of an aberration? It could be both. I know that's a strange answer, but he could go average high 120s, early 130s. It could have been a transition period last year for Lachie Neale. I think he's had his first match simulation in the last couple of days because of a calf injury. I really don't like the sound of calf injuries. That is something that can linger and make it a bit tricky for players. Not in my current team. Still some chance of making it. 50% ownership seems about right.
All right. That's pretty similar to Lloyd then. I am more likely to go Lloyd than Neale. Probably more likely to go Neale than the four mid-forward options, though. But Rucks is where I want to spend up. I think I'd be tempted by either a Gawn or betting on Grundy returning to Gawn-ish numbers rather than picking Neale at this stage, especially with a calf injury. I don't really need too many excuses to try and seek out a little bit of value. But I've been burnt 2 years in a row not picking Neale, and it torpedoes your season when you start without him and he goes on fire. Like, you're literally then in a hole and you spend the rest of your season climbing out, which is not
less. It's less likely to do it this season, though, starting at 720. So the last 2 years, he's put you in a hole because he's started like with some value. But when you're paying 720 for someone, it's hard for them to totally burn you.
Yeah. The only thing I think that is a bit riskier is the captaincy stakes. And if he starts off with a few 170s, when the 170s get magnified a couple of times and you had a Grundy doing 120 instead, that's 100 points in successive weeks pretty quickly. But it's a good point there. Surprisingly, he's not actually the most highly picked. It's Raoul, which obviously everybody loved after last year. 53.7% of teams at the moment. 495,000 means he's got potential. Plenty of price potential there. His preseason hasn't been completely smooth, right? Like, it's still a bit of a return from this injury thing, but everyone's just looking at that upside. What was it? His first game was just average, and then the next three, he pulled Brownlow votes and for BOG. So I understand the temptation. He's certainly in my side at the moment, but pretty unprecedented, right, Mark?
Fairly unprecedented, given the injury. I guess the situation that I'm looking at is probably the player that really stood out to me was Clayton Oliver. Oliver looked good in his first year, but then went 111 in his second season, and not having him was a pretty big cost for people that didn't start with him, and a huge advantage to those that did. And so that, if you got 111 from Rao, like, that would be amazing. That would be such a brilliant result at 500,000. So is that possible? If Clayton Oliver can do it, why can't Rao? He's probably in my team at the moment. Again, there's no certainties at this stage, but I definitely do understand why everyone's picking him. But definitely you're expecting something that happens extremely rarely. There are not many players that can average over 100 in their second season, or especially proper premium numbers of 110. It's pretty rare breed. You're talking top elite level of the AFL, and Rao looks like he could be that guy.
Yeah, certainly helps that Gold Coast started to look a lot more competitive last year, especially when he was in the team. It helps when you are trying to pick a breakout and they're not babbling from the bottom. So that's another plus. Next player, Paddy Cripps, 38.3% of teams, 523,000. Last year was a huge aberration. Certainly a bit injury affected, you would think, but also a little bit concerning that looks like he gets injured because he just gets piled on all the time as the sole hand. Carlton have got some help across the off seasons, and they also should be improving overall. They have shown good progress. So hopefully that load continues to lift, but not just that. You think Cripps is a great player. He'll want to bounce back from last year as well. Can understand, again, why lots of people picking him. Cripps is in my team at the moment. Pretty hard to see me not starting him, barring some injury news.
I was thinking Sam Walsh when I first opened Supercoach and looked through. I thought he could be primed to step it up a little bit in his third season. I wouldn't pick Cripps and Walsh. And I looked at Cripps, and how old is he? He is 25 years old. He's gone 119 and 117 in the previous two seasons, and then had a 97. For a 25-year-old, if they're fit and they've averaged over 115 2 years previously, the chances of that working out are very good. And so I just think probabilistically you probably have to pick him just purely off those numbers.
I think he's probably actually an easier selection than the last two we've talked about in terms of the type of risk-reward equations that we tend to gravitate toward, Mark.
Similar price to Rao, but has numbers on the board.
All right. Next player, you've already touched on him, Clayton Oliver. Last year, his first half of the season, he wasn't really blowing people away, but that consistency and then started to punch some bigger scores. Petrarca playing in the midfield didn't seem to hurt him. Neither did the return of Jack Viney, both of which are positive news because that's a lot of midfield balls who might take away some points from contested possession. Picture of consistency is Clayton. Look at his career since the breakout. He's pretty much a bona fide for the top eight. He's probably the one that I'm least likely to start of these four, though. But when you look at the different options, to be honest, Clayton's been in my team half the time. I just don't see a huge level of upside to him. The type of game that he plays, 125 seems pretty good. Like, we don't tend to see people doing 130 who are predominantly handballers or the grunt midfielders. Granted, he can put some Ks on, but he's not a goal scorer. He's not a penetrating kick. You gave me a bit of a signal there. What do you reckon then, Mark? More tempted by him?
I think he does score goals, doesn't he? What did he score last year? No, doesn't score many goals. I think he relies super high on his big games, or he did last year. So he won 177 and 1205. And without that, he was just really consistent and he's great at pumping out the 130s. The thing I like about Clayton is the sort of player that he'll be on 50 halfway through the second quarter and still manage to post 100 in his bad games. Can get attention and struggle with that, but he's absolutely primed age-wise. The only reason he'd go backwards in scoring is because injury or the fact that maybe last year was an exception and everyone's scores were inflated. He was coming off shoulder surgery at the start of last year. That might explain why he had a bit of a slow start. It's him or Neil for me. I'll go with one of those two guys. And
that bracket, gee.
Yeah, I think that he is. I just think he's the right age and the right sort of player and just has that potential upside. He is a very good chance of making my side.
In terms of likely to fluctuate in price of the four we've covered, certainly got the lowest basement based on his consistency. And that's always something to think about because that means he doesn't really offer himself up as a cheap buying opportunity like some other players would. All right, in terms of pure mids, that's actually the only four that are in above 20% of teams. Tempted to talk about Haitley or Steele or Taranto are just underneath there, but we will leave that for another time.
Taranto seems like he should be over 50%.
That's a spicy nugget we can return to. Keep your ears tuned. Let's go to the rucks, Mark. Rowan Marshall, 48.3% of teams. The question is, though, whether or not you take him as one of your ruck starting spots because you don't want to pay full price for Brody, Grundy and Gawn, who are 650 and 750 respectively. Marshall at the 550 gives you a little bit of a discount and an easy pivot to your forward line and down the track. Ruck forward cover is always fantastic, especially when it's elite. He's probably the most obvious pick for me. Yeah, first pick, actually.
That is a big call, not one that I totally disagree with, though. Marshall, I think it's either you start him forward or you start him in the rucks if you really can't make up your mind about what you're going to do with your rucks. Yeah, I think he'll start in every serious team.
All right, next, Brody Grundy, 46.5. Gawn is actually 37.9%. Last year's big dog. Yeah, Mark, you're making the dollar signs at me. Yes, he is expensive. And that I agree. That's why Brody's in my team ahead of Gawn as well at the moment. I don't see myself paying for Grundy, Neil, and Gawn, especially if you want the Lloyd types as well. Potentially, I may be incorrect about that, depending on where the season goes. But at this stage, that's where I'm sitting. And Grundy, for me, he went backwards last year at his average, which was odd. One of the players I talked about not handling the hub in the same way as when he has his normal work-life balance, which is understandable, presents value, still top two ruck, especially once you pivot Marshall forward, pretty locked. How about you, Mark?
I can't make my mind up what I'm going to do. The top five I find really tricky to work out. Gawn, Grundy, Marshall, Riley O'Brien or Pruce. It'll be two of those five. Grundy, I think that Darcy Cameron being in the side for the second half of the year seemed to have a really big impact on him. And I guess it depends whether they're going to continue to play that structure. Cameron was okay last year. So that's probably the only doubt in my mind. But 130, 130, 120 in a year where he said that he struggled a bit, it's hard not to pick Grundy at 648. So I think you make some really good points. He's probably still 50-50 for my team. And I don't have him clearly ahead of Gawn.
So Gorn's not actually made my side once in the short period we've had so far. What's your percentage likelihood at this stage?
30-ish on Gorn. It's tricky because he's clearly overpriced based on last year. I don't expect him to average that again this year. But then you factor in, well, he's a captain option, like a genuine game-changing captain option that could totally set up your season. He could have a much poorer season than last year and still be 20 points more than the other sort of ruckman that you're going to put in that spot. So from that perspective, potentially he comes in a little bit like Lloyd, right? He's 50K too expensive, but he's way ahead in his position. And what's 50K when you're looking at that level of price range? You can't keep overpaying for players, but at times you can pay premiums, especially if they're a captain option or really clearly number one in their position.
All right, the last guy we're going to talk about in this section is Proust, who's in above 30%. After that, it's a big drop-off, actually. Nick Nat's the next highest at 8.5. I think you can understand why people are looking at him, finally may get an opportunity, but they've still got Mumford there. I don't know that he plays all 22 games, and therefore I'd still be a little bit worried about the chance of missing, considering the ability to sub in the ruck line. So it does come with some risk, but obviously value in the rucks has been a proven strategy. He can be a step ladder to Maxi Gorn. He hasn't made my side yet, but we do like ruck value, Mark.
Yeah, what do we? We've definitely made the decision to go with ruck value almost every time that it's been presented in the past. And it has really worked out a couple of times, but it's also been bloody painful sometimes too. And there's definitely been more than one season where as a result of making that decision to go with value, we've used multiple trades in the ruck trying to fix that. So from that perspective, I probably won't go Proust because I think the price to point benefit is probably a little bit tricky. If he was 250, I think he's pretty obvious. I think at 300, it's really hard for a player to be a good choice. They have to be averaging premium numbers, and in the ruck, that's 110. I don't expect him to be averaging 110. He could definitely surprise me. I don't completely hate the pick. He probably won't end up in my team. He was in my first draft, but I'm going to try to avoid the temptation this year, mate.
Yep, I'm definitely leaning that way as well. Let's go to forwards then. We'll go to the dynamic duo, almost an inevitability that they make most sides throughout the year. Dusty Martin, Paddy Dangerfield, Dusty 37.8, Paddy 30.2% of teams picked at the moment. Paddy comes a little bit more expensive at the 6.12 mark and Dusty at about 5.42. Dusty has actually not been as big a scorer considering his quality. You'd think Dusty was always going to be a 120 once he hit his straps, but plays a relatively selfless role for Richmond. But I can see the reason why people have gone with both of these candidates, because in terms of getting on field, the durability, Mark, you shook your head there. Durability is off the charts, I think.
Dusty, for sure.
Not Paddy. Paddy has only really missed one game here and there in the last few years. He plays injured a lot because he wants
he to. He does play injured a lot. Well, both of them do. That's why they don't miss lots of games, because both of them get on the park and they get up every week because they're so important for their teams. And they do sacrifice themselves, as you've said. I think that out of the two, Dusty's a clear favourite to make my team. I think he has significantly less upside, but far better durability just going forward, I think, rather than just like purely looking back. Danger's had a pretty tricky preseason, seems to have been probably carrying injuries for most of the last couple of years, even though he's played every week. He injured himself in the grand final. Was it a knee injury or something like that? Yeah, so I think Danger is like 610,000, which is a lot of money. With Dusty, it's fun when he's in your team, but he's not an exciting pick at that price. Do you pay $550,000 for a player that's going to average between 100 and 105 and probably play every week? It seems like a pretty good deal, but it doesn't seem like, oh, this is going to win me Supercoach pick.
I actually have had them both come in more when I'm looking at a safe option, when I'm getting a bit of cold feet on how many value forwards you can try your hand on. There's a few we won't get to today. Dunkley, Sidebottom, Heaney, Rosie, there's quite a lot of tempting guys. But yeah, I agree with you. They're both actually probably Not being in my team a heap at this stage, but will be more likely as we get closer to lockout to try and close out the risk profile of your team to be somewhat sensible. Paddy, probably the only thing to note, apart from what you've said, and I think the injury point is very sound, is that with Jeremy Cameron, that might reduce some of his need to go play as a second tall forward. And that really does affect Paddy's scoring. If Paddy plays in the midfield, I'm pretty sure he can still average 115, even all banged up. There's not a heap of midfield replacement for him. Like, we do want him there. We just didn't have forward. So if he ends up playing midfield, it may be a mistake not picking him. But then again, interrupted preseason is probably a red flag enough.
Yeah, it's tricky to say that what he's averaged 110 plus every season except for one season in the last 9 years. And he's had super durability and he's available as a forward with a potential role change to the midfield. That is a very bullish argument for danger. Maybe he'll show something in the preseason and I'll change my mind. But at the moment, he's a clear no.
All right. There's actually more juicy players I want to talk about, but we've spent quite a bit of time on this show, especially with some technical difficulties trying this future stuff. So we'll call it there. Maybe we'll just let you tell us whether or not you pick Joey. The rest of you will have to wait to discuss Zeeble, Dunkley, and Sidebottom, because we need to put aside some time to talk to our Patreons as well. Just a little spruik for that, because we haven't yet. If you want to support the show, we record bonus content for our Patreons as a massive thank you to keep us going. We would have shut this show down actually a while ago if not for our Patreons. And we record custom content to reflect that appreciation and hopefully give a few extra nuggets. It tends to contain some of the higher level strategy that we may not get to, and some of our more out there theories will go on that show, as well as Mark ragging on me. So if you want to listen to that, make sure you sign up patreon.com/supercoachcoach. We'll be going to discuss our initial teams, impact of season 2020 more broadly, talk about the rule changes. So I'm going to leave some time on that. So to finish, Mark, Joey Danaher, 233,000. He's played all the scratch matches, apparently.
Oh, mate, almost made me swear. I'm pretty shattered, to be honest. It's going to be painful. If he does well this year, it's going to be extremely painful as an Essendon supporter. I'll probably hedge that by putting him in my Supercoach team so I can really cope emotionally every week with him kicking goals. If he's playing and he's fit, which everything indicates so far that's true, then I think he's a pretty easy selection.
We are going to call it there. I've got to do some admin-y stuff so that people can join groups, our league, etc. Don't forget, we've got a Discord. We've got a community forum on supercoachcoach.com.au. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Jump on, get involved. Thanks for joining us again to kick off season 2021. There's going to be a flurry of content because I think this is probably one of our slower starts to the year, but everybody else has been pretty slow too. Thanks again for joining us and catch you again soon.